Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. This show is for Parshat Toledot. Recording is being done on Wednesday because of the Thanksgiving schedule in New York, since the show goes out on the internet, not just on Arut Sheva, but on OU Radio as well, or goes out on OU Radio, and not just there, but also on Arut Sheva, Israel National Radio. From whichever perspective you want, that's the story. First broadcast is Thursday, Yom Chamishi, Kuf Tet, Cheshvan 5769. That would make it Erev Rosh Chodesh Kislev, which is Friday, Thursday night, Friday. The secular date is the 27th of November. More importantly, or more significantly, it is the 4th Thursday of November, and that means it's Thanksgiving. We'll talk maybe a little bit about that, and especially my memories from childhood as to how a kid growing up in secular, non-Jewish America related to various dates on the secular calendar. Thanksgiving was always one of those which some people observed and some people didn't. Those who didn't said it was not for Jews, and those who did said the concept of thanking God is always in vogue. Maybe I'll mention one or two other things about that. Not important at the moment. The fact that it is, as you're listening, at least possibly, Leil Rosh Chodesh, or at least Erev Rosh Chodesh in the afternoon. Therefore, the psalm which we will recite will not be 130, but will be 121. It's really an artificial, arbitrary distinction, but it sort of developed that we would use Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim on days when Tachanun is said, and Shir LaMa'alot Esa Einai El Heharim when Tachanun is not said. So even though I am actually saying these words on Wednesday, many listeners are hearing it only on Thursday, some on Friday, which means that we'll use Psalm 121. Kuf Kuf Aleph. Shir LaMa'alot Esa Einai El Heharim Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan, shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmoret tzeitecha uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. אחינו כל בית ישראל הנתונים בצרה ובשביה, העומדים בין בים ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאים מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. There are a lot of words in the piece that I just read, and in anything that we say, that has the same kind of pronunciation issue as this week's Sedra, the name of this week's Sedra. Most people, now here, when I say most people, I'm not talking about a fluent native Hebrew speaker who has not been influenced by any other language. He will probably say Toledot. And the average American Jew, knowledgeable, yeshiva background, shul going, will say toldos or toldot. The point of contention is the shva, the two dots under the lamed. Do we say that the word breaks up into syllables as toll and dote? Or, which is wrong, or is it done correctly, toe, its own syllable, and lidote? The lamed with a shva is a shva na. Without giving a whole lesson on it, it belongs to the following symbol, and the way you pronounce it correctly is to lidot. We had in Psalm 121, shomerecha, not shomrecha, but somehow with an English language background, it's common to say that. And I try to be careful and pronounce it correctly. The difference is that there is one shva called the shva noch, noch, a resting shva, which does not contribute any vowel sound to the letter it is under. For example, the name Israel in Hebrew, Yisrael. Yisrael, Yis is a yud with a chirik, yeh, and a sin with a shva noch. It acts to close the syllable, but does not have a vowel sound to it. Yis-ra-el. But, sho-merecha. There, under the mem, is a shva, the other kind, a shva na, and it does have a short vowel sound, merecha. If it belonged to the show, it would be shom, no vowel sound. But this belongs to the following symbol, and there is a short vowel sound. Hashem tzilecha, not tzilcha, but tzilecha. There's a slightly different issue because the lamed has a dagesh in it. Let's not get into that. But you have a lot of words like that. In the Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, you had ha'o medim, not ha'om dim. And it makes a difference, and sometimes it actually makes a significant meaning difference, most often not. But it's nice to fine-tune and polish one's Hebrew pronunciation, especially when it is in the context of prayer or Torah reading, which happens to be a column in Torah Tidbits called Towards Better Prayer, Better Davening and Torah Reading. In any event, that's what I have to say, and the parsha that shows it most is To Lidot. And when I write it in Torah Tidbits, I do TO-L-DOT, so it's not read as Toldot. It's one of my hang-ups, and it's one of the things that I like to share with students and radio listeners alike. Because really, to some extent at least, those who listen to Torah Tidbits Audio are like my students, or are my students. Before we get into Toldot, and I might lapse and say Toldot, you'll have to forgive me. Before we get into the Parsha of the week, I would like to play a song, which is the word version of the theme song for Torah Tidbits Audio these many years. At the beginning of the Torah Tidbits Audio, about 11 years ago, I used a track called Simcha, Joy. It was an instrumental track done by an artist called Roman Kunzman, Zichrono Livracha, a very close friend of mine, and I liked it. But I gravitated years later towards Eitz Chaim Hi, which I also like very much. And that has been the theme for quite a number of years, in the melody. And then it fades down, and I talk over it, just to show off what Cool Edit 96 rather, can do. Because that's the program which I record with, and then upload to Arut Sheva and to the OU Radio. In any event, the name of the song is Eitz Chaim Hi, but because the words are used when we put away the Torah on Shabbat, right before Musaf, a lot of people, a lot of shuls, will sing one verse earlier, and that's the rendition that you're going to hear now, begins with Ki Lekach Tov Natati Lachem. That particular verse is from Mishlei, Proverbs chapter 4. For I give you good instruction, do not forsake my Torah. Ki lekach tov natati lachem, Torati, my Torah al ta'azovu. Then you have also from Mishlei chapter 3, Eitz Chaim hi lamachazikim ba. What is Torah? It is a tree of life to those who grasp it, and those who uphold it are happy. And then, Durachecha darchei noam v'chol netivoteha shalom. Its ways are ways of pleasantness, and all its paths are peace. Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva. This verse is from the last, next to the last sentence of Eicha. Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva. Turn us back, O Lord, to you, and we will return, renew our days as of old. This version is from an album by Nathaniel Cooperman. Eitz Chaim Hi, or perhaps Ki Lekach Tov, however you want to title it, it's the same thing. I thought it would be nice to put words to that music which you hear only in instrumental form every single week. So here it is. Nathaniel Cooperman with Eitz Chaim Hi. Most weeks I try to make an effort not to just duplicate the written Torah tidbits on Torah tidbits audio, and even if I do, it wouldn't be in the form of reading something that was written there. It would be elaborating on an idea which I didn't have enough room to write out, and on the radio I'm able to present it more, just as I am in a shiur. You're not listening to a recording of a shiur now, you're listening to the recording of the broadcast. But I do want to touch upon an idea, because to me it was a fresh idea. I don't know if other people and other sources have explored this particular approach, but to me it was not just a new idea, but a sort of turnaround from a traditional perspective. When you look at the accounts in Lech Lecha, actually let's go back a step. Bereshit and Noach, creation of the world, early generations, the flood, the next set of generations, and at the very end of Noach, Avraham Avinu is born, not yet Avraham Avinu, not yet our forefather Avraham, not even Avraham, he's Avram there, but at least we're introduced to that person who becomes the father of the Jewish nation. It's in Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chayesara, Toledot, Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, Vayechi, which gives us the range of Avraham to Yitzchak, or let's say Avraham and Sarah, to Yitzchak and Rivka, to Yaakov, Rachel and Leah, to the children of Yaakov who become the tribes of Israel, which brings us all the way down to the end of Vayechi, with the death of Yaakov Avinu. So you have a hefty portion of the book of Bereshit which presents and introduces us to our forefathers. As far as substance, details, episodes, we find much more of Avraham and Yaakov and relatively less of Yitzchak. Yitzchak's first major thing, besides being born, was Akedat Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, but the focus on that is the test to Avraham Avinu and his faith. Yitzchak is a player in that episode, but not the main character. In Chayesara, a lot was spent on Avraham finishing his, we'll call it, public, as far as we're concerned, life, with the burial of Sarah Imenu, the purchase of Hebron Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and then his sending Eliezer back to his hometown in order to find a suitable bride for Yitzchak. Yitzchak is not a main character. His name is mentioned repeatedly in Chayesara, and at the end, at the very end, he meets Rivka and marries her and is comforted for the loss of his mother as a result of this new shiduch. At the beginning of Toldot, the story of Yitzchak is Rivka has been barren for a long time. They pray to God. She becomes pregnant. And Yaakov and Esav are born. Then there's a flashback to a situation where Yitzchak and Rivka are confronted by a famine. The Torah makes a point of saying, aside from the one that happened during the time of Avraham, and they seem to do very similar things to what Avraham had done in handling the famine in his time. The Torah continues, and we do see something about Yitzchak, but surprisingly, or not surprisingly, it's all kind of things that we've seen before. In fact, that's the point that the Torah is making, that Yitzchak was very, very much like his father. And Yaakov was the one who sort of branched out, and literally and figuratively, and broke away from just being exactly like the parent. Because shortly after these few things that we see about Yitzchak, the Torah tells us he's old, he's blind, and he's basically wrapping up his life with the blessings for his son. And if we get to that, we'll get to that, but that's the point. Now, the impression that you got is Yitzchak was a carbon copy of his father Avraham. The Torah actually makes a point of saying not only, this is at the beginning of the Sedra, that not only are we talking about Yitzchak ben Avraham, Yitzchak the son of Avraham, but immediately followed by Avraham, Holidat Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak. So that it's a reinforcement of the idea that this is his son in many, many ways, and they are very much alike. So, all of that is old hat. What am I saying, and what's my point? My point is that the two of them are extremely different in very important ways, and the fact that Yitzchak behaves in a similar way to that which Avraham did becomes remarkable, not just copying his father, but copying his father under the circumstances of his birth and upbringing makes a point. What do I mean? Avraham Avinu was born to idol-worshipping parents in an idol-worshipping society, and he himself worshipped idols as a child. He made a personal rediscovery of God, went on a campaign against idolatry, influenced many, many people to belief in one God, and later had a son called Yitzchak, in whom he developed the personality and characteristics that reflected himself. But look at this son. Yitzchak was not born in an idol-worshipping society. He was born to Avraham and Sarah and grew up in their house, which is very different from the one that Avraham grew up in. Of course, the most important part of what I'm trying to say is how this impacts on us. I don't know if all of the listeners are aware of some of the abbreviations and initials that are used in Jewish circles, but there is the phenomenon known as the BT. The BT stands for Baal Teshuvah, the one who grew up not religious, didn't keep Shabbos, ate non-kosher, and all the rest, and some point, either in his teens or 20s or 30s or later in life, became Torah religious and observant. That's the BT, the Baal Teshuva. Then there is the FFB. F as in falafel, F as in falafel, B. The FFB is the frum from birth. Frum from birth means religious from the time he was born, born into a religious family. Hold that thought. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio. We will be right back.
I'm Rod Sterling. You're listening to
Torah Tidbits Audio.
Rest your eyes.
Before the break, we were talking about the differences between Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu as far as their background is concerned, and the remarkable result that they ended up being very much like each other, even though they had such different backgrounds. Now, I again want to bring this to modern times, to our own times, and to our own experience. Among the religious observant Torah Jewish community, you have people who came from religious homes and continued their religious observance, either the same as their parents, or sometimes more and sometimes less, or those who are Baalei Tshuva, which means they went very much against the upbringing that they had and became Torah observant Jews, even though their parents were not. Those are two very different experiences, and what you would expect is that the BT would be very different from the FFB. What you would expect, what we would have expected, was that Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak would not be alike. The fact that they were, and that the Torah seems to make a point that they were so alike, is noteworthy in light of their very different backgrounds. And as Ma'asei Avot Siman Labanim, the deeds of our ancestors, set patterns for our own time, patterns and alliterations. Skip that unless you know what I'm talking about. The follow through, I think, is significant. Let's put it like this. among many other aspects of this issue and FFB. A goal and a challenge that is from the Baal Tshuva's world, and that is to be enthusiastic about his observance, about his Judaism, where an FFB would tend to take things in stride and take things for granted because he's always been there. I've personally contrasted my own experience with that of some of my friends. Let's take the one example of making brachot. When people speak of their excitement in making a bracha for the first time, I feel a little deprived. I do not remember the first time I said a bracha for a piece of bread or a drink of milk. These were said by me before I could form whole sentences. So I never remember a time when I didn't say a bracha. There are Baalei Tshuva that I know who went through 20, 25, 30 years of their lives without ever making a blessing for food. And when they are introduced to that and they take it with a love and with a an enthusiasm, it is something to be inspired by. So, Avraham, Yitzchak, I believe Yitzchak had that challenge of personalizing all of that which Avraham went through in order to become the God-fearing person that he was. Now, take the same scenario and not talk about Judaism in general, but let's focus in on what we consider to be a significant issue, and that of Eretz Yisrael, living in Israel. Avraham Avinu is your quintessential Oleh. He grew up in Chutz La'aretz, and at the advanced age, or we'll call it in his lifetime, early middle age, picked himself up at God's command and came to the land of Israel. Yitzchak Avinu was born in Israel and lived every single one of his 180 years, every single day, 24/7 as we say, in the land of Israel. It's a different perspective on things, and that they should be similar to each other is, again, noteworthy. But again, what it does as Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim is speak to us today. We have Jews who live outside of Israel and are being called to make Aliyah and to fulfill the mitzvah of living in Israel and to fulfill the destiny of the Jewish people, which began with those words, Lech Lecha, when God commanded Avraham to pick himself up from his father's home, from his birthplace, and go to the land which I will show you, referring to Canaan, later to become Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, Avraham's story speaks to some people. But then there are people who have lived in Israel all their lives, born here, and never even made a trip abroad, or even those that did still live here all their lives, and some people trace their lineage. I am a seventh generation Israeli or a seventh generation Yerushalmi, and it's a different perspective. Add to that Yaakov's experience, which we'll get to. The person was born in Eretz Yisrael, left at an age when he was sent out to find a suitable bride and to save himself from Esav. This is this week's Torah reading at the end. And spent a significant chunk of time outside, came back to Eretz Yisrael, spent part of his continuing years here, only to go down to Egypt and remain there until he died, and having given instructions to his children, especially to Yosef, was brought back for burial in Eretz Yisrael. That, too, is a familiar scenario for some people. And the fact that the pillars, the foundation stones of the Jewish nation, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, were different from each other in the way they acquired their belief, in the way they raise their children and the way that they approached Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, the qualities that each one had which differentiate between them, serve us well as being a varied foundation upon which we have built and continue to build the Jewish nation. I hope that's getting across. We'll change the topic in a moment, but I want to share with you a website and one particular download from that website. I have always been a hobbyist when it comes to old radio. It started really for me, not from my early childhood. I don't remember too much of that, but I did listen to certain shows on the radio. I remember Have Gun Will Travel, while it was already starting on TV, was also on radio, Gunsmoke on radio, and a few other shows. But the heyday of, or the hey years of radio was before my time. Radio Mystery Theater, CBS Radio Mystery Theater, attempted to bring that back, and I thought it was a very successful attempt, and I was faithful fan of Radio Mystery Theater, to the point where not too long ago I bought 4 CDs with over 1,000 episodes, the whole series, and I still listen to it on my MP3 and on my Palm. Anyway, I had found previously different selections of old radio shows to download, was introduced to things that my father told me about, and recently I found a website, www.calfkiller.com, with what has to be the most extensive and varied collection of old radio, but it is a gold mine of old radio shows, drama, mystery, crime, comedy, music, variety. It's just incredible. I'll just give you one teeny weeny little example of something that floored me. I was listening, I downloaded and listened to an episode of Hercule Poirot, one of the Agatha Christie detectives, her main character. And to me, having read many Agatha Christie books, it was an experience in reading not quite a classic in literature, but something that belonged to a period of history before my time. Listening to this episode, I don't remember when it was from, it was introduced by Agatha Christie herself. It was a wonderful experience. Anyway, that's not why I'm telling you this. I want to give credit to calfkiller.com. I recommend it for anyone who remembers old radio and wants to hear it again, to anyone who has children that they want to introduce to old radio, to anyone who might be interested in enjoyable entertainment that you could take with you on your iPod and on your cell phone and on your MP3 and in your Palm, etc., etc., without needing to sit down in front of the television or the video and watch it. You let your imagination picture it for you, and it's a wonderful experience. Among the many, many, many thousands of shows that they have were several old radio shows and recordings of Victor Borge. I remember Victor Borge from my early days. He was on Ed Sullivan and on other variety shows in the States. A very entertaining, humorous pianist. He was called the funniest pianist in the world. And he had a training in classical music, played very, very well, but developed a humor which blended with the music in very entertaining way. In addition, he had a few well-known stand-up comedy routines. And one of them that I remember fondly from those years, and I found it, and I listened to it, and I'm going to play it now, is called Inflationary Language.
3 years ago in Denmark we had inflation, and you are familiar with that problem. I invented a language which I call inflationary language. In inflation we have numbers rising. prices go up. Anything that has to do with money goes up. Except the language. See, we have hidden numbers in the words like wonderful, before, create, tenderly. All these numbers can be inflated and meet the economy, you know, by rising to the occasion. I suggest we add one to each of these numbers to be prepared. For instance, wonderful will be tutorful. Before should be B5. Create, B9. Tenderly should be elevenderly. Lieutenant will be a little leavenant. A sentence like, I ate a tenderloin with my fork will be, I nined an elevender loin with my five. And so on and so forth. I have a book here I brought. I have a story here I'd like to read to you so you get an idea of inflationary language, how it sounds when it's being used. Twice upon a time, there lived in sunny California a young man named Bob. He was a third lieutenant in the U.S. Air Forces. Bob had been fond of Anna, his one-and-a-half sister, ever since she saw the light of day for the second time. And they were both proud of the fact that two of his five fathers had been among the creniners of the U.S. Constitution. They were dining on the terrace. Anna, he said, as he took a bite of a marinated herring, you look tuneful three nights. You never looked that lovely B5. Anna really looked tuneful in spite of the illness from which she had not yet recuperated. Yes, repeated Bob, you look tuneful three nights. But you have three of the saddest eyes I have ever seen. The table was tastefully decorated with Anna's favorite flowers, thrillums. They were now talking about Anna's ascertained husband, from whom she was seponited. While on the radio, an Irish Eleanor sang, Tea for three. It was midnight. A clock in the distance struck 13. And suddenly, there in the moonlight, stood her husband. Done two. He was done one. There stood her husband. Done two. Obviously intoxicated. Anna, he blurted, five give me. I'm only young twice. And you are my two and only. Bob jumped to his feet. Get out of here, you three-faced triple crosser. And Anna warned, watch out, Bob. He is an officer. Yes, he's two, but I'm 2-3. Any two for 11 is? All right, said Don Two as he wiped his five head. He then left, and when he was 1.5 way through the revolving door, he mumbled, I'll go back to 11 and see. And be double again. Farewell, Anna. Thriddle-loo, thriddle-loo.
Victor Borga was a Jew, lived into his early 90s, from Denmark. He was very proud of the fact that he was on the Nazi blacklist as a comedian who made fun of Hitler, and he managed to get out before the Nazis occupied Denmark, and did not hide the fact of his Jewishness or his anti-Hitler stance. But this piece I've always loved, and only sorry that he didn't mention my favorite food, which is threna fish, but that's another story. One of the stories of Yitzhak which has always struck me in its echoes and reverberation throughout Jewish history is the period of time when he lived in the territory of Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, the Philistines, if that's the right translation. And he became very successful there, and there was a jealousy which led to, in essence, the expulsion of the Jews from that area, meaning Yitzhak, and of course his wife, etc. After he left, the people realized that their prosperity came from his being there, and they pursued him to come back. It happened in many communities in Europe throughout the Middle Ages that Jews were exiled because of jealousy and because of various other reasons, and the people probably woke up and realized how stupid, for lack of a better word, expelling the Jews was, and often invited them back. What always amazed me is the fact that the Jews came back, sometimes repeatedly. When I read of certain expulsions from certain countries, where after 20 years Jews returned, and 10 years later they were exiled again, and then they returned, and then they were exiled again, one begins to wonder, what is this attraction to a person's country that the country doesn't seem to want him to be there? But it's a complex psychological thing, and I'm not discussing that. I'm just reacting to that particular phenomenon. It's really amazing in general how many different things we find in Torah that echo throughout history, and this is part of the meaning of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, which I mentioned before. The deeds of our ancestors set patterns and show us certain behaviors so that we could recognize it in our own time. On that note, I want to say that lessons from our ancestors are not always positive. The trick is to be able to learn positively from the positive lessons and to learn positively and constructively from the negative lessons as well. In other words, don't say, well, we're talking about Abraham, so everything that he did was obviously the right thing to do, the correct thing to do, and we have to do it. Not necessarily so. To make things easier, let's use an example from Yaakov Avinu coming up in a few weeks with his favoritism towards Yosef, which helped fuel the fire of the jealousy of the brothers, which led to very negative things. We are not supposed to emulate that action. We are supposed to learn from that action, even in a negative sense. Now, Avraham had those kind of things, and so did Yitzchak, and I personally do not subscribe to the notion that, no, you're misinterpreting, because everything that the Avot and Imahot did was 100% correct. I don't believe that is so. I believe we're supposed to see them as people with failings as well as great successes and be inspired on all counts. As a math person, I think of it in terms of absolute value. The absolute value of plus 5 is 5. The absolute value of minus 5 is also 5. So there's a lot to be gained if we can go in the right direction in both kinds of lessons. Take the good lessons, shun the bad lessons, but learn from them. And that's part of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim as well. I think I mentioned last week that Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the first day of Kislev, which is Friday, Thursday night Friday, Rosh Chodesh Kislev is unique among the Rosh Chodeshes in that it can fall on any of 6 days of the week. It is possible that Rosh Chodesh Kislev will be a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, interestingly, but never on Shabbat. Most Rosh Chodeshes, in fact, most dates on the calendar, have 4 days of the week they can fall on and three that they can't. Some have five. The ones in Kislev, the dates in Kislev, have six different options. This is obviously the summary of a much longer discussion, which we have had and which we will continue to have in the future. Just remember that Rosh Chodesh is a time for introspection and celebration. And I don't have much time to explore that either, just enough time to wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.